Test, 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 test. Hello.
Hello, test, 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 test.
I need to fix a lot of things, including the inbound recording volume of the other side, because it's been really overdriven. Hello, how are you?
I am swell. How about yourself?
I am too. I feel pretty good. We can talk about it on the show if you want, but actually we should probably, we have to acknowledge the noise because it's kind of funny. Can you hear that?
It's like a gurgling. Yes.
Oh no. Well, the bang bang machine is back. And boy, if I got follow up.
Ooh.
Okay, I'm gonna stop recording and I'm gonna go check and listen. But I'll hang with you for a minute. This is probably a good idea anyway, because then we don't get caught up with the whole muting blah blah thing. Okay, let me just go listen real quick. Merlin Raw, Merlin Raw. That sounds fine. Remote is Alexandra. Merlin's talking a lot, so he can't hear anything. So the existence of Audio Hijack new version is officially known now, right? Didn't they make an announcement?
I don't know. There was a blog post a few weeks ago, or last week. I'm not sure.
I feel like there was. I need to have you been using, well, did you get on the new one?
I am not using it now, but I've been playing with it. It's awesome.
Oh, good. How does it feels pretty good. It feels solid.
Yes, I think so anyway. But what the fuck do I know? I have a trickle of internet. I don't know what I'm doing, but it's fun. I like it.
Well, it's I this represents Audio Hijack for obvious reasons, represents a part of the workflow that needs to work and be consistent, and I need to trust that once it's, because I'm such a simple person, like once it's set up nominally correctly, I need to know that it's just going to work, so I don't get things like last week. I also don't utilize all the features. Like I want to get better at, like, not the stuff for the Merlin fancy version you animals don't like, but at least noise reduction. Like I need to normalize Roderick's side when we record because it's really erratic and like overdriving. But man, how about some of those advanced module things? Pretty cool,
It should cost more. I kept playing with it and I'm like,
huh?
oh, we spent so much money on equipment that does this. Oh my God.
And generally, I think like a lot of people, like the Marcos of the world, I prefer, and Dan for that matter, if there's a hardware thing that can do the thing that I want and I can afford it, that's all almost always a better solution. Unless you're, again, unless you're Dan and you have a separate Mac Mini set up just for recording, which I'm not going to do at this point. But I was really struck by, yeah, no, I agree with you. It should cost a lot more, and I'm just struck by how much care goes into that. They talked about, they said something on probably upgrade. Yeah, the most recent upgrade, which was really good. Did you, I don't know if you heard it, but they were talking about the whole like, percentage thing and did you listen to it? It's
No.
okay if you haven't. But they were talking about, and Mike and Jason were expressing a lot of frustration with the, the reading aloud some of the stuff related to the Dutch dating app fee. The way they're charging, what is it? Some what was the weird amount?
27. I have no idea.
Yeah, 27%, like this weird number, like, oh yeah, 3% processing fee, blah blah. And just the hostility of that and deliberately making it the shittiest. I mean, they both seem to agree. Apple is deliberately making, dragging their feet and making this as shitty of an experience as possible. But then the terms, like, do you know about the terms about how developers, they have these really tight restrictions about how you have to report back within 45 days and that you can be audited by Apple and just all this shit where it's like, it's so fucking hostile and gross and like the worst side of the Steve Jobs era, But and then they were saying like but just in terms of the hostility toward developers, like think about what you have to do to make Rogue Amoeba products work. Understanding, as most people won't or shouldn't care, that Rogue Amoeba is a very good team player. Everything that Rogue Amoeba is doing with their apps properly utilizes the official correct Apple way to do shit, and it still feels like you're installing malware.
Mm-hmm.
You have to reboot twice. You have to go say, are you sure that you want to have your dick out for the rest of the month? Like, all you have to like agree to all the terms and conditions, and like that's the official proper way to run a Mac apps. You have to go through this, all these rings of fire, and it's like, what the fuck?
I mean, the obvious and easy answer to this, most people would say capitalism, but you would say fear and money, fear or money, and I think that's why.
Well, I think that is almost always involved in decision making, but like to take it a step further, if there is a fear that Apple has, it's the fear of losing any amount of the absolute power they've accumulated.
They have the normies now.
Normies?
Yeah. Like, I mean, before, you know, you suck off Adobe to keep them on Mac OS X.
Even though Adobe built their entire business on Macs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but and
people
now
forget that, but like Adobe was a Mac company.
Yeah. And there's a Syracusean Halo Bungie joke here, but I haven't had enough caffeine yet. But, I mean, once you have... I don't know anyone who has a PC who isn't really into their PC. It is the opposite of like 2001. It's very strange. I'd like the year, not the movie.
So you're saying if somebody's using a PC today, they're maybe not to the level of like a Debian user, but there's somebody who likes the fiddling around and the control and all that stuff.
Yeah, with the exception of, I guess,
gamers.
Business. No. They love the fiddling. They love the hardware and specifically use things. I don't want to say the way Apple people used to, but they are often more opinionated than the majority of people who use.
They have more things they can decide about.
Yeah, well, with Windows, the operating system, less and less.
I mean, now, like if you're primarily, if you came at the Apple ecosystem through an iPod and later iPhone and iOS, like you've grown up, you maybe not you in particular, but somebody not that much younger than you has grown up in a time when Apple is the iPhone company and you're accustomed to that gatekeeping. Whereas somebody from the PC world, right, different point of view.
I mean, now I think if you have an Android phone, it used to be that you were poor, and now it's almost that you're a nerd. Like, Android...
You're a rebel, really. I mean, in terms of cultural context.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
Yeah, we should probably record the program. What was the other thing I was going to say about this? The terms... I'm sorry. I'm telling you, just knock me out for a month. And let the doctors do their work. Whatever you want to do. If you want to fix my teeth, fix my teeth. Whatever it is that you want to do, do all the things while I'm asleep for a month. I'll basically be in a morgue, as we've discussed.
Pull off the toenails.
Yep. You get your toe knife out so you can... I just watched that. The screenshot, I know you're not on Twitter, the screenshot from which I pulled that picture of Danny DeVito saying he's got to find something to... some garbage to stop the bleeding. I think that's the first Frank's toe knife episode. And it's, I think it's, what is it? It's Dennis and Mac break up, which I think I never saw. No, we watched it the other night and everybody in the family was like, I don't think I've ever seen this episode.
Yeah.
And it's really funny. It's very funny.
I don't know if I'm not caught up on the podcast that's no longer a podcast, but
it's still fun. But man, when you bring a camera in, everything changes.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just it's not the same.
No, but it's also feeling a little more Spotify corporate to me. And as I said, I think
what the fuck? It made me very sad.
Yeah, did you dupe me? Like, I thought this was like an independent project, and now they seem a little bit like, I don't know, like they're playing with some idea of making money or something from it. And like, I don't know. I don't get it.
They might be, but they've mentioned a couple times they are filming in the offices of Mythic Quest. So yes. I don't know if I don't know. I do not understand the wheelings and dealings of Hollywood, but it makes me sad either way.
I like the existence of Megan, though. I hope she becomes their Megan. Alex. She has a nice smile.
I love Megan.
I do too. Hey, you know, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so snotsy. While we're here, may I recommend that we do a quick pre-flight? I don't want to crush the bunny, but you're not in the dock. Let's see. Cream and Sherman. I don't know. I was taking a shit earlier and thinking. And I was thinking, I wonder, I don't want to, I never want to crush the bunny. That's the last thing I want to do, but that's stupid. Oh, hi. There you are.
Go on.
I wonder if it would be useful as a phrase I'm going to use for the second time in 2 days, a paper prototype that we make planning to throw it away. I wonder if an interesting idea would be for each of us to bring in one thing we're kind of pumped or excited or mad about for like what we might call a mini topic.
Yes.
Or, I mean, I just to give a little more structure, because I feel like I've been very scattered on the show lately and I don't want it to just fall apart. I don't know. It's just something to think about. I'm not married to that.
I thought about it and I have proposed to it. And I mean, marriages sometimes fail and they end, but I hope this one doesn't. It sounds like a lovely paper prototype.
So this is what it's like when you haven't had enough caffeine. Is that right?
This is Due by Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Alex Cox and Merlin Mann. This week's challenge, watch Sherman's March.
I think this might be the show. This might be the show.
I came out of a meet. I came out hot from a meeting. Yeah.
This might be the show. Are you recording?
Yes.
This could be the show. But okay. So here, let's go through real quick. Let's do a quick clean out. Alex didn't want to check email. Is that still a thing?
No, I did. We're getting rid of that. I did. I checked my email.
Jabroni, we already did. Flags for Flying. I don't know what that is. Channing Tatum's trauma. We've got to talk about. And my addition here might be that I've added a couple new items to the things that need a name list, which I'm so glad I started, Alex. Whenever I say this, I realize that I sound utterly mental, that like everybody knows that writing things down exists. Everybody knows that lists exist. But like this, it's like Mark Twain says, the difference between lightning and the lightning bug. Having a set aside list where you capture a particular type of thing utterly changes the way you think about that thing. Nobody believes me until they do it. Do you know what I'm talking? You know what I'm talking about, right?
I have lost the thread. Yes.
Okay. So let me go look at my run X's. This could be the show. All right, so like I've started also occasionally, in addition to putting it in the name, I've started like my favorite files I want to float up to the top. So this example is just a file called Things That Need a Name, RunX. And you know about the chicken problem. You mm-hmm. know about the Photoshop problem. Oh, this is one. You like this one. The thing where you say, I'm from Chicago or whatever. Okay, I'll come back to that one. But quotes to get right. Like everything changed as soon as I started noticing. Instead of having to rethink the thought, oh, I bet this quote is not accurate or it's misattributed. Well, now I got a place to put that. Obviously, things like Twitter bios, that should be a RunX. Words I dislike. Oh, I've added some new ones to that. Pay-fors.
This is almost like pay-fors, like a no.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're gonna pass this new legislation, you got to figure out the pay-fors.
Pay for is this like hog
isn't that horrible?
Fat pigs for pay for it dot nut.
Is a pog an inflated MILF? I've never known. Is that sus? This is definitely the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna just read you my paper cuts inbox from words I dislike. Uncharted territory. No, you mean uncharted territory, and you sound dumb when you say that. Someone was rushed to the hospital. No, normally we really take our sweet fucking time getting into the hospital. Shut up. two ticks of the reporting classes. I caught up with Alex Cox. This week I sat down with Alex. Stop saying that. Obviously double down. Double down, that's not what it means. It's a blackjack term. Endgame. Endgame has become like epicenter. You don't really mean epicenter. Epicenters are for earthquakes. And what you really mean is, as I've said before, when you say epicenter, what you probably mean is a center or an origin or a start. Endgame, it has a specific meaning in chess. And it's useful as a metaphor for other things, but endgame does not mean end. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, but I've never heard anyone say that except in terms of...
Oh, they say it all the time on cable news.
I know. I've noticed that a lot of these words correlate. Not saying it's causation, but they sure do seem to correlate with MSNBC a lot.
Oh, 100%. And like Russia preparing, Russia's preparation, they're 70% prepared to invade Ukraine. And now, so this, you know, is reaching the end game. It's like, really? Do you know what that means? Okay, here's one. I swear to God, I'm gonna pop a fucking kidney the next time I hear that somebody broke their silence. So, like, somebody's wife and son got driven off a cliff yesterday in an unfortunate accident, and now the father is breaking his silence. Is he breaking his silence, or is he just speaking about it now? The correlation for this for hipster bloggers is quietly announced. And you're not that smart. Don't act like you figured, oh, they're quietly removing Joe Rogan's podcast. Joe Rogan. Rogan?
Wait, is there more Rogan updates?
There's the N-word stuff, you know.
The
I know you mainly look at RSS, so you may not be keeping up, but there's been some problems with Rogan and the N-word recently. And this is the most embarrassing, uncomfortable thing he's ever had to address publicly.
I will say, though, if I was someone who used to have friends who worked at Spotify when the Joe Rogan Experience was being bought, I would know that I would think at least that there would be some employees who would have to go through and transcribe those episodes and mark each potential problematic ones.
Vis-a-vis, have to write down the N-word a bunch of times.
And flag which ones that possibly in the future needed to be, quote, quietly removed.
But what about the pay fors? Are we in endgame? Be honest. What did you do? You did one last time that was real shitty. You said, "Oh, ask." You had ask.
I'm going to make an ask, and then I got to ask. I make an ask. You know what? I'm going to make an ask right now. I'm going to make an ask. All
got to make a number two. Got to go make a two. broke his silence. Broke her silence. Whatever. Broke their silence. I despise that because it's another one of those incredibly lazy. We're supposed to be nice to journalists because we respect them so much. But Jesus Christ, what
Wait,
a bunch of fucking
when?
Hacks! No. Well, I mean, like, there's all kinds of shit from political Twitter that I've picked up by osmosis. I'm probably using that wrong over the years. And there's just all of the little paper cuts of the fucking journalist class that where they're like, you know, looking over their tiny glasses and reminding us that there are valuable scribes. And you can tell because they use all this totally unnecessary jargon. Like, I get it. Like, there's something meaningful to saying head and deck. Whoa. Those are meaningful terms. And like in the industry, those have a meaning. Like any industry or any, you know, any trade. Like, you have terms that are meaningful inside of your group. Well, but be careful that you don't fetishize jargon where, like, it's like me talking about regular expressions. Like, I know just enough to be dangerous. I know just enough to get it a little wrong at best. So, like, when you say shit like broke his silence, I also really don't like, you know, there's like all the house style on political Twitter, breaking, colon, and then some fact they just saw on cable news. Well, you didn't break that. Did you break that story? Or exclusive? Or scoop? Scooplet? Siren? Meh. Fuck off. And finally, God damn it, I understand that there is a house style at every outlet. You know, I mean, in the same way that when I go to Title Case Converter, I always choose Chicago because I don't know why. I used to do MLA. Now I do Chicago. There's a house style, right? But like, setting aside the whole clickbait thing, do we really need to keep writing headlines like it's 1940 and we're trying to deal with a limited number of space on a piece of paper?
Example.
Okay, well, I have not prepared for this. I'm going to go to news.google.com, and I'll probably, because my demos are always the worst. What I'm talking about is, let's see, so Cox, colon, lockdown parties not related to in-house policy experience, something. Like, that clip style where you leave out articles and you leave out pronouns, because you're writing as though, like, I imagine these people think they're like fucking Matt Drudge. Like, they're sitting there with their little hat with the card that says press in it.
All the ships and chains, we go to press.
Like, fucking, like, do we create so much ambiguity with that dumb jargony style that ends up creating those sorts of headlines that, I mean, there's Twitter accounts about, like, headlines that, like, are you sure that's what you meant to say? Mainly because of something so obvious, leaving out articles, strange order of words. Let's see. Can I find a good one here? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, the very first headline that I have at news.google.com, New York rolls back mask mandates. Florida Surgeon General won't reveal vaccination status. Live COVID-19 updates. And I know that's not strictly like a headline, but there are just a lot of things packed into what I don't even know what this is.
Oh, it's really funny. There's a local, as part of that trend now, that in which I would, and I don't understand if they
so
must have their
colons
reasons.
And semicolons.
But like New York Times and Washington Post, they have their stories now. When you click sometimes on a headline or a link, you end up on this weird scrolling page of two paragraph chunks, like the reporting on fucking 9/11 at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, 9/11. No, what are you doing? Like, it'll be, and like there's, the Chronicle does this so comically sometimes. Where it'll, you know, and because they have to combine, or in that shovel blog Mac Rumor sort of way, like, hey, roundup of the day's news, you know, AIDS kills millions. Also, hottest new spots for dim sum, and you're like, okay, well, thanks for the roundup. That's now I feel like I've really digested a lot of important news. I will, as a project for myself, find some of these. But you know what I'm talking about when you see a headline and it's written in this incredibly clipped style.
Oh, I do. I just wanted to hear a 1920s radio voice, but I could have just asked.
Maybe Butler's. Let's see. For GM. Now, see this one? It's got verbs and it's got, I like verbs and I like articles. What do I mean by articles? Like, do you really need to leave out the small words? Are you that pressed for space that you don't want to provide more clarity in summarizing an entire article into a non-sentence? Because most of them are not really a sentence. CVS stock is tumbling. Lowered range for cash flow guidance. Unnerved investors. Like, okay, I guess that's okay. Oh, God. Just stop beginning your sentences with so... So a coffin was put on sidewalk Monday in San Francisco. I'll read that again. So a coffin, no comma. So a coffin was put on a sidewalk Monday in San Francisco.
Oh, God. There was an amazing, I think it was, oh, gosh, what's his name? Oh, fuck, Quinn, you're going to, hey, listen, so I'm going to have to change. What's it, the guy who did, here's an idea channel. Hold on. Idea channel. Mike, fuck. Oh, he's so nice. Mike, hold on.
No,
oh,
it's
this
fine.
Is
you're
bad.
Fine.
This is
you're
like
doing great.
When, okay, Quinn, sorry.
Why are you talking to Quinn, Alex? What are you doing?
I want her.
You want Quinn to help you? Do you want to get a lifeline?
Mike would do
that. Someday I'm going to do a supercut of every time you do that. You're like a rabid Marge Simpson. He did a celebration of new ideas. Who are we talking about?
He did. Mike Renetta did a Twitter thread. Not that I would ever be on Twitter, but it was a thread of Atlantic headlines in technology. How do we get so, quote, cringe? We booped the sun. wait, wait,
Wait, is that two different ones?
That's two different ones. Oh,
how do we get so cringe?
Yes, how do we get so cringe? That is a story in the Atlantic. And we booped the sun.
We booped the sun. Oh,
I didn't see that.
Is the sun a good doggo? Is it a healthy pupper?
The answer is by posting. Oh my god. Oh, this is Democrats moved the filibuster Overton window. The economy is good, actually.
Oh my god.
Thanks, Atlantic.
Oh god, that's so bad. Okay, one way in which I am a real normie guy is that, like a lot of real normie guys, I'm not going to criticize the person. I despise the work, the output, the oeuvre of CNN's reporter Chris Cillizza.
Mm-hmm.
I think his work is execrable and really sticks out as being... He reminds me of... Oh, who is it? Is it Matt Walsh? Who is it on from Upright Citizens Brigade that's on Veep? I think it's Matt Walsh. Is that his name? Matt? No, who's the guy on Veep? He plays, oh my God, that show is so good. Matt Walsh, yeah. Which I started, you know, I'll just sometimes dive in and just watch a season of Veep, like practically in a night. Still so fucking good. Season 5 is so good. But like Matt Walsh, you know him from UCB? You know, he had the titular line in Star Wars.
Yeah, yes.
And he gets a job. Remember, that show is so fucking funny, Alex. And, you know, he's got his wife, played by, what's her head? Piggy Hill, I think. And they've adopted the Chinese baby, and everybody hates him and nobody wants to talk to him. And then he gets a job working for a blog where he has to publish 10 articles a day. And he's obviously like an exhausted, like money strapped 50-year-old guy. And so he has to adapt to this 10 articles a day blog culture. And like that's what it feels like sometimes when you see somebody cosplaying somebody clever. And as I say in the document and in life,
I think it feels like that because it's how it is.
Oh, you're probably right. See, but like I do look at Google News and I've developed this amazing ability to see a headline on Google News. And I get the feeling. And I look down and it says CNN, and I say, I'm not going to click it, because there's no byline. But I am about, I mean, honestly, I'm being conservative. I am about 85% correct when I can identify that it's a Chris Cillizza story. So I don't know if he picked the headline or, you know, or he just works with somebody who knows how to make him sound really, really stupid and like he's writing for a blog in 2006. But, let's see. Again, this is just off the top. Looking at his headlines on the CNN page, this is the big loser in the redrawing of the country's congressional lines. Why the Donald Trump National Archives story is such a big deal. What Nikki Haley doesn't get about the January 6th fight. Can Liz Cheney's massive fundraising save her? Here's even more evidence that widespread election. But like it's just this, like that style. It's so adolescent. But I guess you got to do it for a job, but you're a journo, breaking, scoop, exclude, flashing light.
When you were writing about 47 folders, did you have a general guide to just how you would structure, not full on Chicago style or like you need to noun and verb this, but just rules you didn't want to break?
Kind of. And one thing that I'll always be a little bit embarrassed about, and I think this is the pre-Syracuse era when I learned this, but definitely Syracuse took me to task on this, is, for example, I used to write a lot about things, not about the Apple Mac operating system, but like things related to it. Like a big part of what I was writing about was, you know, this is the era before iPhones. It was basically you had Macs and iPods. That's what Apple made. And I would refer to their, I don't know how I developed this, but I never checked it. I would refer to the operating system as OS 10 no space.
Oh.
For example. And I finally, one of the first times I ever had the bad impulse to go in and directly edit a PHP MyAdmin table with find and replace was to fix OS X to OS 10. I didn't, but I have to be honest, and I've confessed this before. I'm not trying to puff myself up. If anything, quite the opposite. I'm saying I was a vanguard of assholishness that, like, I got the BuzzFeed style before BuzzFeed was a thing. Like, I knew that if you make people like lists, and nobody likes a list more than I do. And I knew that I could say, like, maybe not quite the level of, you know, 149 surprising ways to turbocharge your blog. But I would often say, you know, the 7 Quicksilver tricks you didn't know about, something like that. But I don't know. I guess I'm from a different time, and, like, I don't want to cover myself with glory, but I understand the power of verbs. And that if you can find that when we're on, you know, as Lincoln says, when our better angels prevail, we remember that it's all about verbs, and that the verbs should be, when in your writing, think about your writing differently, in the sense of, what if I spent a lot more time putting the work of my writing onto verbs? I mean, and then, like, obviously, fewer adverbs, you know, fewer adjectives. But when you're doing not even formal writing, but when you're doing any kind of writing, one reason my tweets are funny is I understand verbs. And I understand that a joke, the funniest part of the joke has to be the last 2 to 5 words. The funny part needs to be at the end. You need to structure it in such a way that then the verb does a lot of the work. That's my main guiding principle, and I don't always follow it, obviously, but if there's a way that you could rewrite a sentence to have the verb do more of the work without being cute, your writing will improve, because it forces you to think more clearly, and it forces you to not fall back on our worst habits of just getting something down. But I didn't have, like, I don't think I had, like, an official, like, a style thing. You know, usually it's, like, ridiculous stuff. Like, I tend to pick shorter titles, just unrelated but related. I tend to pick a shorter rather than longer title for Roderick on the Line, because I just aesthetically don't like the way a long headline breaks, as in line breaks in our particular theme. Like, it's, I don't like, you know, I don't like it when there's one word on the line below. Just aesthetics, but no. I respect house styles, though. Like, I get it. That's cool. And I've got the New York Times style guidebook here.
Cool is a word for it.
It's pretty cool, because what's neat about having the actual book is that it also provides, it's not just a rule, but I feel like, if memory serves, it also provides you some pretty good context for why we do it that way. And, you know, on first, so like New York Times, like, obviously New Yorker has that funny tick with using a diuresis on any, almost any word that has two vowels in a row. But, like, do we need to say coordinate? Like, no, but that's house style. That's how they do it. But, you know, like, New York Times, on first reference, there is a name. It's Joseph R. Biden Jr. And then I think there's a kind of a weird rule about second time their name, but then subsequently you name them by an honorific on their last name, right? So President Biden, MX Cox, like, whatever.
I was going to say, there's going to be some fun editorial juggling that happens when I feel like honorifics slowly are going away or being, like, gayed up or confused, and woohoo.
I have to tell you, like, I my feeling about pronouns, I hope I've shown my bona fides in, like, in the best faith trying to call people what they want to be called, including pronoun usage that I don't understand. I love Van Ness is a road, Jonathan Ness, the guy on Queer Eye, who I, like, some of my favorite moments on this very good season of Queer Eye in Texas, it's a really good season, are, like, where, you know, the classics, where he has a moment with somebody and they're open to learning about what his deal is. And I'm, you know, I don't think he's going in there and getting, like, you know, Proud Boys that need a makeover. He's generally talking to people, like, you know, like that guy who lives in a container on the ranch, on the Kobe beef ranch. That guy, I love that episode. And Jonathan will say to the guy, where the guy's like really reluctant to even say, like, you know, what, how am I don't even know what I'm supposed to say, and I'm scared to ask. And Jonathan goes, well, I identify as, I think if memory serves, Jonathan says, I'm non-binary, and I use the pronouns he, was it he, she, and they?
I think so. I don't remember. Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, look, I will call you whatever the fuck you want. But when you tell me that, I want to get it right. And like, this is a me problem, not a you problem. But I don't understand what I'm supposed to do with all of those pronouns. On the one hand, I'll call you whatever you want out of just respect for you as a human being. But in conversation, when I have to refer to you in a way that why we have pronouns, what am I supposed to do? And how does that serve the purpose of a pronoun to disambiguate which proper person you're talking about? That's the part that fucks me up. With that said, honorifics, give me a fucking break. There's too many goddamn doctors out there. I'm telling you, when you watch Hoarders, there's a lot of quote-unquote doctors on there. And there's also, I'm just going to say, we'll cut this out. Cut this. Don't cut this. But there's one episode where they on Queer Eye, where there's this wonderful woman. It's just fucking amazing. And she runs like a clinic. And they refer to her through the entire episode as, you know, Dr. Zimzam or whatever. This is Dr. Zimzam. Dr. Zimzam runs this clinic. And I turned to my lady friend and I said, this is going to be, just so you know, this is covered by Family DA. I'm going to say something to you that I would never say in public, but I'm going to say it to you. I said, first of all, I want to stipulate this woman seems very cool. I'm glad she's getting a makeover and this is awesome. And I have so much, this woman works harder in a given day than I've worked in my entire life. But I have a feeling, I'm not going to look, but I have a feeling if I go and check, that person's going to have maybe a PhD, which is fine, except they have done absolutely nothing here to do anything but give us the impression that that person is an MD. There's a person whom they call doctor that runs a medical facility, and they always refer to the person as doctor.
Okay, I'm losing my mind. Which episode? I thought I saw that one. The episodes.
It's the one with the really cool African-American woman who's very worried about her hair. It's such a sweet episode. It's so good. Do you remember where she wears a wig all the time?
She's not a doctor.
Well, no, they call her doctor. They call her doctor the whole time,
what?
And then
yikes.
Well, okay, and then and this is why we're such a nice compliment to each other, because like you, unfortunately, my wife is the kind of person that will go look something up. And let's say she didn't say this. Let's say this is in my own words.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's worse than that. She has an EDD. She's got the Bill Cosby degree.
Oh my God.
She's got the lowest conceivable thing that you can get outside of chiropractic that allows you to call yourself a doctor.
Oh.
Now, yeah. Okay, fine. I know work is hard. Believe me, as bachelor man, I totally understand the difficulty of writing an undergrad thesis about TV that allows me to demand people call me bachelor man. I understand, believe me. And it's a bachelor of arts, just to be clear. I get that. I just think that it is so insincere. It's so, like we say in the South, butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. If you present somebody in a medical setting and call them doctor, And this is why my wife's colleagues increasingly, I think I've said this here because this is a real bee in my bonnet, increasingly refer to themselves as so-and-so MD because they realize there's been doctor inflation too. MILF inflation and doctor inflation. They both have to stop. That's not a cougar, let alone a MILF.
Oh, God, if you interpret this literally, it's just...
Well, she seems like a nice lady, but, you know, I want her to feel good about her hair.
Watching too much Archer. Ooh.
I would be fine with honorifics going away, except that I think one, and this is a chicken problem. Like me growing up, I'm curious if you were taught this. Growing up in Ohio, in the Midwest, like you, you say thank you, and you say please, and you say thank you. And you say, you're welcome. You don't say no problem or it's all good, man. You always say you're welcome, because when somebody thanks you for something, first of all, you don't say thank you back. Don't do that. Say, you're welcome. And then you could say, you could add to that and say, oh, you're welcome. And thank you for having me on.
In fact, Merlin, no. You don't say you're welcome. You say you are welcome.
You are welcome.
That is what at least the Catholic Poles said to each other.
You're still welcome. Or like, you know, sometimes I'll say, I think this really annoys her, but Madeline will say something like, I'm going to go out for a run and hit Whole Foods. And I should be home around 3 or 4. And I'll say, you're always welcome here. Why do I say that? I don't know. It's really annoying. Okay, so first of all, let's get this clear. I was raised in Cincinnati, Ohio, born 1966. I was born, and you always say please. You always say thank you. You say you're welcome. And I mean, I do. I'm practically like a John Mulaney. May I please have a Diet Coke, please? You know, as opposed to like Mick Jagger expecting it to appear in his hand. Not funny. All right. So that's one. You always say please and thank you. You always say sir and ma'am. You say comma sir or comma ma'am at the end of a sentence. And you always call everybody Mr., Mrs., Miss, or later Ms. You always do that. And now I know that that represents a lot of, I don't know, the chitons of cultural hegemony title. Like on a scorpion, we've built up all of these layers and layers and layers of, keloids and tortoise shells to like protect our cultural hegemony. But that was a nice thing in that you always knew what you were supposed to do.
Oh, wait, though. What do you mean you always knew what you were... as in, like, there were clear outlines?
Well, because everybody looked like a guy or looked like a girl.
Right,
if the person
right.
looked like a guy, you say, sir, and you call them Mr. So-and-so. If it looks like a lady, you call them Miss or Mrs., and you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That was easy because we lived on the binary. Like, that's what we did. And I don't regret the loss... I don't regret the new subtlety of trying to get better about that, but I do also wish that people would say please and thank you and call people by whatever honorific they like, except doctor, which is bullshit.
Why do we need honorifics? There's
because it suggests familiarity. So when you meet somebody,
isn't that just an adjective, like a glorified adjective? That's it's called an honorific. It has honor in the word. Like,
but when you're introduced to somebody, this is going to sound like a crazy question. This I might as well be asking you if you put doilies around the feet of your furniture because you don't want them to be too sexy. This is a virtually Victorian point of view. But when you're introduced to somebody, let's say who's your elder, let's say you're introduced to somebody that your parents, your family has known for years that you've never met or you haven't seen. Like since you were a toddler and you're introduced, say somebody says, oh, you know, Alex, this is Joan Osborne, the singer. No, whatever. You go like, oh, this is Joan Osborne. You know, we used to be in Daughters of the American Revolution together. And this is Alex. You haven't seen Alex since Alex was a baby. What do you call Joan Osborne? Do you call them Joan?
Okay, this is a situation.
First reference, Clarice. Do you call them when you're introduced? Do you say, "Hey, Joan, what up, bitch"?
Well, that's.
I would say, "Hello, Mrs. Osborne. It's so nice to meet you."
I would say, "Oh, it's such a pleasure to meet you." And yes, I would say indeed pleasure because that seems like a lovely interaction to have.
But pleasure.
Pleasure. I'd be like, but I would not be like, "Oh, hey, cool to meet you." Even though like maybe if someone a few years younger, I would say,
"Well, maybe it wasn't nice to meet them, so they don't deserve an honorific." Joni.
Okay. All right.
Fucking
hold
cunt.
Hold on.
Go write a song, bitch.
But I'm also not going to. Oh, God. I also wouldn't be like, "Hey, Joan, my pronouns are they, them. What are yours?"
You've totally changed the topic.
No, you totally changed the topic. No. I am saying that
you're saying you don't call anybody Mr. or Mrs.
No,
when you meet them?
No, no,
you just go,
no, no, no. I
see what up, G.
I read the room, and if that person expects to be called Mr. or Mrs., just in the same way that some people want to be referred to by, I'm trying to get better, like M ear, like I literally, like with neo pronouns, I am learning how to use them correctly to refer to a person. It's difficult, but I'll leave.
For a second, I thought you were talking about Neopets.
Exactly.
Neo pronouns. Okay.
Exactly. I'm learning. I make mean jokes about it, and
that
I'm
was
terrible. Yes, thank you. Thank you.
That was very bold and brave, I have to say.
Yes, you are welcome.
I am welcome. But because your community is a big tent. Although we don't call it a tent.
Boy.
We call it MX tent.
But
If you don't know, you have to err on the side of formality. And if somebody, then they always can say, you say, well, nice to meet you, Dr. Osborne, chiropodist or chiropractor. And they say, oh, call me Joan. But like, I don't like the assumed familiarity. Like if I were introduced to you, for example, and I say, hey, this is Alex Cox. What I wouldn't do is say, what up, Al?
Well,
because
yes,
not only am I being familiar about a first name, I'm calling you a name it's not. I've added extra familiarity, non-existent familiarity to our relationship, and I hate when people do that with me. I don't need you to call me Mr. I do what I do because it's the right thing to do. I hope you do the same thing. I just if you err on the side of formality historically, you can always then pull back to like, oh, no, I'm going to offer you in this power exchange. I'm offering you more intimacy. You don't have to call me Dr. Osborne. You could just call me Joan or Auntie Joan.
Right.
Oh, Auntie Diluvian.
When someone, if my mother of 60 years old now says, yes, this is Joan Osborne, I probably would be like, ah, yes, let's shut up.
No, keep going. I'm just on typing titles. This is good. This is Joan Osborne.
Be like, okay? So I would just say, so nice to meet you. Because now, like, a friend of my mom, they're like Gen X, they're 60. Like, if I were to be like, hello, Mrs. Osborne, she'd be like, oh, please, you just made me sound so old. So I am just like,
Dr. Osborne's my mother.
Hello. I would just be like, hello, nice to meet you.
Call me Sugar Tits. Nice to meet you, MX Sugar Tits. Now available for playing on PC through Bungie.
That was fishing for titles. Fishing for
MX Sugar Tits. What if God was one of us? Cream and Sherman. Hey, Alex, how you doing?
Is this a show? Are we talking about Sherman now?
We can find a way in. Hi, friends. I'm not gonna call you parapals. That's horrible. Why would you do that? Parapals.
Because someone was like, make up a name. And
that
then,
sounds ableist, Alex. It really
good.
Does. It really does.
It does. It does. And I regretted it as soon as I said it, and it has.
Yeah,
stuck.
You're literally crippling the language. Hello, everybody, and welcome to View by Friday. It's a weekly challenge podcast hosted by Alex Cox and Merlin Mann. This week's challenge, Cream and Sherman. I was going to say, what were you talking about? Now I lost my thread. Antediluvian. That's funny. That's funny, bullseye. But, so we don't know where the show will have started, but yeah. And I also, you know what? We don't need to address the noise because it's gone away for now. But just real quick, what I'm dealing with is some noise, what I have previously on Back to Work referred to as the bang bang machine, because as it turns out, the time that the road work people outside start their working on road is almost precisely 5 minutes before I start any podcast. And they have so much heavy equipment out there, and I'll explain why in a second. They have so much heavy equipment out there, and one of them is this amazing device. Like you've seen people use this is a technical term, a jackhammer, right? The thing where you've got the butta 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 thing, and you hold it, and it goes butta butta butta.
Mm-hmm.
This is on like a Caterpillar, full on, like a bobcat or something, like you know, but like no bigger than a bobcat, like a big Caterpillar, and it's got this thing I'll get a photo for you.
Wait. You just explained in great detail what a jackhammer is, and now you're talking about a cat. What the fuck is a caterpillar?
Caterpillar is the international leader in construction equipment. They make those yellow things that make buildings.
I don't know. Caterpillar.
You're telling me, Alex, you don't know what caterpillar means.
I know it turns into a butterfly. No, I don't know what a cat. Oh, this is what I would call a truck. That is my.
Okay. There's a truck outside. And the neat thing about I'm not gonna say caterpillar, I'm gonna say a truck. The neat thing about a truck is you can get all kinds of different kit that you put on there. So like they've got a scoopy thing. They've got all these different ones, but you know, you can get different attachments. And I got to get a photo of this thing for you because it's fucking amazing. So you remember when I explained jackhammers to you a minute ago?
Yeah, butta.
Butta. Now imagine a jackhammer, except it's like so much bigger and attached to a truck, especially the part of the truck that has the truck arm mm-hmm. to which you attach things like a scoopy thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this thing pounds the shit out of the road in a way, a jackhammer. It's like John Henry all over again. Like this thing is just, I just went out and watched it for like 8 minutes today. Watch them do this. It's incredible. Because what they're doing is they're tearing up part of the road outside. Spoiler alert, they're in the midst of replacing the tracks for the streetcar line, where if you ever remember, I don't know if you've ever heard it, but sometimes you'll hear a streetcar going by, you probably never heard it. They're replacing those tracks. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what my involvement with this will be. Given the signs that are on the street, it will be at least 2 weeks of like really serious bang bang machine.
Ooh.
But the process of doing this is going to take 2 years. So I
what?
Don't. They've claimed so many parking spaces in our neighborhood. Basically the street perpendicular to ours, like we can look out our front window and we see where they now store the construction equipment. And the place where they store the construction equipment is where everybody used to park. So the next 2 years should be really interesting. Ooh. Fancy San Francisco. Oh, look, there's a hole. I better go take a shit in it. Look at my truck. I'll get photos for you. I did a video yesterday. Send it down.
Of the bang bang machine?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not very good. And I think I feel bad. No, I don't feel bad. I feel scared that I even did it because I imagine it looked like I was recording something to post to Nextdoor. I go out there, meh, I'm wearing my sweatpants and I got my phone, meh. I take a photo and I give him a little wave and a smile, meh. But just sincere. But I wonder if they read that as, here comes the troublemaker.
Whoa. Wait. I just blacked out. You had an interaction, like you smiled and what did you do?
Is this another thing about me being a Gen X person? You don't smile and wave to people. Do you even say hello to dogs?
No, but I'm holding a phone, clearly filming them.
Oh no, I'm just gonna stare at my screen and act like nine guys in hard hats aren't there.
Don't
notice me.
Yes,
I'm a blogger.
Yes.
I'm gonna report on your work. Meh, problematic. Meh. Fuck me.
Oh god.
All right, here's the bang bang machine. I'm saying this to you right now. That is a shot from just outside of my office, my private office that you've been to. I hope that goes through. I don't know if it will. But I just sent you a video, and you can see what the truck.
Ooh, it's a robot banger! Oh,
but you see,
man.
You see what I mean? It's like a jackhammer, but real big and attached to a truck.
Yeah, that's what they are.
Are you testing me, Satan? What are you doing? That's crazy. Well, that's like somebody going to a construction site, and instead of a hammer, you give them like a Harley Quinn mallet. They're very, very different things. This is heavy. Okay, I'm definitely having a neurological event, and I'm broken up with you for 30 seconds.
Okay, all right.
Anyway, that's just to say, hey, everybody, welcome to the show. You might hear some bang bang machine, and I've decided I'm just going to embrace it. Oh, and then I went out after they ran the bang bang machine. Then they brought in the scoopy machine, and holy fucking shit, because they got to like collect all the pavement. So I think we're in the part where they're doing PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric stuff, like while they're at it, as long as they're tearing everything up. So I think what they're going to do is they're going to make a bunch of holes in the road that they then close up at the end of the day, like put the big metal thing over it. I hope it won't be this bangy all the time. But then they brought the Scoopy machine and bang, 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 you break up all the pavement. Now, what do you got? You got a bunch of big rocks. Now, I can just guesstimate that each one of those rocks, woof, 100 pounds or more. And this Scoopy thing makes such light work of it. It's really inspiring to watch.
Have you befriended any of these people? Are they similar?
Am I pregnant with any of these people?
Have you befriended? And by befriended, I mean, have any of these workers acknowledged your existence? Or do they just... Well, you waved at them. I don't know. Did you expect anything in return?
No, they're like people on Twitter. No. In the sense that, like, I bet they're having a lot of fun with how disruptive this is. That they get to come in and they have a mandate to act however they want and everyone has to accommodate them.
Meow. Meow. Your photos are bullying me. Meow. Trauma.
Oh, poor Channing.
Did you send me the link? You sent me the Channing Tatum link. What was the other link about the this is not abuse person? Didn't she have a new article you sent me?
I don't know.
No, I'm sorry. I'm speaking very poorly here. You know that person you like? Conflict is not abuse.
That is a book.
Let's see. You sent me calling. That's it. Calling people out for gaslighting is just a lazy but effective way of shutting down dissent. Yes. I like that because it's a sentence. You sent me that, and that's from whom? Is that written by the conflict is not abuse person?
No, Human Barakat. Human Barakat. I don't know. I don't know the only, and I know that he also wrote something because he was like being dry, like, oh, another straight white man. He's like, I am neither of those things. But
that's funny. I like when that happens.
But
it's like when you explain, you know, nuclear physics to a nuclear physicist who just happens to be a pretty lady. Yeah, I'm a pretty lady, but I also know a lot about physics. I sent you this. We'll put this in notes. From New York Times. If everything is trauma, is anything? And I said to you, wow, talk about something that's our shit. And because, you know, it's about trauma, it's about not trauma, and it's about West Elm Caleb. I'll put this in
there. We don't talk about West Elm Caleb. God, I hope he's happy.
The man had been effusive at first, sending compliments, engaging in witty back and forth, making a playlist that included that song by Mazzy Star, you know the one. And then suddenly he wasn't. New paragraph. As it turned out, the guy had sent the same playlist to multiple women. Boo. He allegedly sent at least one of them an unsolicited nude photo, a picture dicture. As he woke up next to one woman, he was planning the night's date with another. Like so many online daters before him, Caleb was a creep. Next and final paragraph of our reading series. But in the language of TikTok, and perhaps the language of our current moment, he was more than that. He was pathological. Caleb, better known at this point as West Elm Caleb, a 25-year-old furniture designer in Brooklyn, who was the subject of viral mania last month, was accused of love bombing women by showering them with interest, gaslighting them by making them think he liked them, and then abruptly ghosting them, leaving his victims to bond over their, quote, shared trauma. Has there ever been some paragraphs that are more our shit right now?
Oh, boy.
Not necessarily in a good way, but this is certainly relevant.
I mean, whenever... And, you know, I realize now that I am also from a very different time at the ripe old age of 31. But Jesus fucking Christ. Geez.
I think you do real well. I think you do real well.
But
really, seriously, considering. The considering is, as they say on political Twitter, doing a lot of work there. Scoop, exclue, flashy light. Scooplet.
I really hope Caleb's okay. I hate that I think about him every single day.
He just wants to get his dick wet and design furniture.
Oh, God, man.
Fucking people.
I have, by this definition, I am like I fucked someone to make Maddie jealous when long ago enough that we weren't married or like really dating, but then I never returned that person's call.
Oh dear, is this okay? Is this okay to talk about?
Oh yes, no, they knew this. We were not dating.
Shouldn't.
We were not dating. We were not yet dating. We were in college. It was a consenting fun time with the other person. We're still friends, but they were my dorm mate.
The queers are really unmoored. It's really hard to look
at. Well, and that's the thing. We have become, I miss sex negativity for me.
I do too. Oh my God, we need to get so much more negative. Oh my God, get back in the closet. That closet, but like, oh no, please fuck privately and never talk about it.
But that's what I thought what dating apps were for. I thought that was for what the dirty pictures were for.
I'm so into your entire gender journey, and I'm so not into hearing about what you want to fuck. That's just me. That's Ohio. that's the casserole mindset, my friend. So anyway, you were saying you fuck somebody to make Matt jealous?
Yes, and I never returned that person's call until like, by call, I mean DM.
Oh, so the person who got used really was that person.
Oh,
that person was a cipher for you.
Yes, I loved bomb that. Oh, God, it's just not, no, it's, but no, I'm just, like, all, and all of my, what most people would consider, like, friends who are members of woke mobs are like, oh, dude, am I like a rapist compared to West Elm Caleb? I've sent so many. Adidas put boob pics on the internet today for
Adidas put
bras.
Boob pics.
Yeah.
He's like a headline.
Uh-huh.
Adidas put boob pics on the internet today. Is that for Olympics? Yep. Paralympics?
It was to sell bras.
Oh, God, that sounds like Instagram. Instagram loves selling bras. I've heard.
They just, I, right before we started recording, someone sent me literally just sent me a text that was what I saw as a collage of boobs. And I did not want a text from this person.
Was it actually a screenshot from Aliens or something?
No. It was a link to a tweet from Adidas. And I am like, this man who I used to have a professional relationship with, who I've been trying to avoid, literally sent me a picture of boobs.
I'm sorry, because like I so deeply don't want to know about this, and I'm definitely not going to look it up. Nude boobs, like,
yes,
examining for tumors,
on,
boobs,
full on.
You're talking about titties,
breasts, yes, full on
titties,
engorged,
say
titties.
Say titties.
I can't do it.
Titties.
Say it.
Look at them titties. Adidas titties. All day I dream about sex.
Oh, did Chicago see? Now when I try to go on Twitter, it just breaks. Don't say gay? What?
Don't say gay. What? Is that trending or something?
Did I age 50 years and a half hour? What is happening?
You are so uniquely bad at not using the internet.
I know.
It's really a gift.
I am unique. Truly.
You are unique. You're a special snowflake. Everyone says so.
Adidas bra. Oh, not a Adidas bra revolution. Was this a fake thing that someone sent me? Okay, no, this is
important. Think you just got love bombed.
This is, I've been now ghosted by this tweet.
I was watching something. I'm sorry, were you done? Do you have more boobs?
I don't know. I'm glad that I made Maddie jealous, and I'm glad that I'm still friends with that person. And
oh yeah, so the ends justify the
very,
means.
Oh,
really is what
no,
I'm
no,
thinking
no.
is the ends.
I feel bad for everybody in the Caleb situation, especially all of the women who were like, "No, we were just like goofing and telling a story." Like, because the way.
But wasn't there sort of an en masse movement to say, "Hey, everybody,
yes,
pump the brakes! Like, stop being mean to Caleb." Like, it's one thing for us to have a fun text thread about this, and quite another thing for this to turn into an internet mob thing. Wasn't that kind of what happened?
Yeah, but then the mob turned on
the mob turned on the mobbers.
It's like a Mobius mob. It just, I don't know.
Oh, it's working out great. It's all working out great.
I don't know.
So
which
much
side
affecting
of
so much
on.
Change. It's really, what a great time. Oh man, yeah. So nice.
That's why I don't talk about poor West Elm Caleb.
You do, though. You do
no,
that.
No, no, no. Oh, here it is. Here it is. Wait. Is it? Yes, it is real, motherfucker. It is.
Okay, Alex, reading series. Talk to me about Adidas boobs.
And I'm just going to send you a link to a website on Twitter.com.
I feel like we talked about this so many times.
Okay. Now, I received this from a co-
God, Alex, what the fuck?
Right?
Oh, my God. Right? I have to start a new thread now. This one's... Oh, come on. Ew, I don't like this.
Right?
Why did you send me this? Alex just sent me a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 by 1, 2, 3, 4. 25 pairs of boobs.
And this is...
This is horrible. Oh, God.
Right before we started recording.
Oh, God, I'm reporting you. Whoever the most powerful person is in the thing in your life that's closest to HR, please transfer my call. I need to speak to your manager immediately. Look at all these titties. Some of them are little and some of them are big. Some are dimes and some are silver dollars.
Most of them are
like pancakes.
Women of an advanced age.
We believe women's breasts. We believe women's breasts in all shapes and sizes deserve support and comfort, which is why our new sports bra range contains 43 styles. Nice number. So everyone can find the right fit for them. And then there's boobs.
It's like someone, like an angry CEO, went into a meeting and was like, listen, I want something.
Shake it up, you guys. We need something needle moving.
Release the titties. We need something that people will write a think piece about and talk about on a podcast. And it works.
I need more takes. Make the takes hot. Give them fuel for takes.
So I think that this is a successful ad campaign.
Yes.
Good job.
Good for them. Good job, Adidas. Very bold, very brave.
God.
Gotta love a German company. Live, laugh, love, mom.
I said I was going to use good mic technique during Do By Friday, and that's
never going to happen. Do not address Quinn. Do not address our listeners. I wasn't addressing anybody.
I was just addressing somebody. I'm addressing you. Merlin, okay. I'm talking directly into you.
I'm very angry right now. Live, laugh, directly. I don't want to belabor this because we do have potentially two challenges to talk about. But
Adidas freeze than a nipple. Oh, there's already things. Don't worry.
Okay. To quote my brother-in-law, there's no way this will end well.
Nope.
You sent me a thing the other day that is also our shit, and I don't want to belabor this, but it does give me a chance to read you some new entries from the list. You sent me, I didn't read it yet, you sent me a HuffPost piece. Channing Tatum says he's too, quote, traumatized, unquote, to watch any Marvel movies. You sent me that, and then you said, okay, yeah, we definitely need a new word. But then it's funny, but then you find out why. Like, was he joking? You find out it's because he didn't get to play Gambit?
I don't know.
The five worst X-Men ever?
That's the thing. When they put it in, was he kidding? Was this a bit?
I bet he was kidding. Because I like him. You know what's funny is when you first sent this, you know I do that thing sometimes. You remember when you sent me the Sunny podcast and I did, even though their faces are on the fucking art, like on my iPhone, looking at it, I did not pick up that those are the three creators and main writers of the show. Holy shit. It's, you know, Mac and Charlie and Dennis. I didn't pick that up. Now, when you sent me this, for some reason, again, a little bit neurological, for some reason in my head, I thought this was, who's the Winklevosses in the Eats People? Army Hammer?
Yes.
For some reason, I thought this was Army Hammer. Even though I know it's Channing Tatum and I love Channing Tatum. He's very fun and Free Guy. But I saw this for some reason. It was double funny to me at first because I thought it was about the guy who gets a boner when he thinks about eating ladies. Half a Winklevoss. Better than none. You know, they say the definition of an optimist. God. Is the Winklevoss half full or half empty?
Oh, everything about Army.
This is all things considered. Channing Tatum says he's too traumatized, and that's because he didn't. I bet it's a joke. I'm not going to read this, but I bet it's a joke.
Well, no, he just
said he was kidding.
Well, he was like, but that's the thing. It wasn't. It I read the sentence around three times and it's not opening, so I don't remember what it was, but he's like, yeah, man, I was traumatized.
Tatum still hasn't recovered from the rejection. Once Gambit went away, I was so traumatized, Tatum said, I shut off my Marvel machine. I haven't been able to see any of the movies. I love that character. It was just too sad.
What does Marvel machine mean? Like, is he talking about the like Marvel industrial capitalist complex or like Disney Plus?
Well, and like this is, I'm on the horns of a dilemma here because some day one Strunk and White shit is when you do attribute, and everybody says this, it's true. When you're doing attribution, unless you're trying to have a comic effect, when you're doing attribution, just say said. Like Alex Cox said, Merlin Mann said. But in this instance, I do kind of wish it would say either Channing Tatum laughed or I'm too traumatized to watch Marvel movies, Channing Tatum joked.
I've never wanted an adverb more in my life.
Or something that's like, I can't even stand, I'm so traumatized, I can't watch Marvel movies, Channing Tatum said for some fucking reason. Like, that would be useful as attribution. So that went on the list, you know, that's on the list now of things that need a name.
The thing is, when I read that,
Channing Tatum's trauma needs a name.
I was like, wait, did something really bad happen to Channing Tatum? Because he seems like, I mean, as normal as one can be with like that kind of job. Like, I don't know. It was just really weird. And it made, I don't know.
I know. It's funny. My favorite one I added this just last night. Descript is just, oh God, Descript has become so important in my life. As previously stated here, this is an app, long story short, it's an app that I use for doing Roderick on the Line. It's also an app that supports the creation of every podcast I work on because it allows me to take the audio recordings, drop it into this app, it turns it into a combined audio file, but most importantly, it turns it into a rough and ready transcript, where you can edit the transcript and that edits the audio. It's pretty amazing in lots of ways. The way that I use it, I mean, every week for every show, search for the word notes, right? Because that indicates anytime I ever said, I'll find something for show notes. Not that I'm perfect at this, but that's useful. Search for video, search for articles, search for link, search for YouTube, like anything that will help me remember. That way I don't have to write everything down. If I forget, I'll remember. Why does Merlin like sotto voce mutter the word title? First of all, it's a bit and it's funny. Fuck off. But also that allows me to search for the word title and find anywhere where I might have said a good title. And it's a bit and not a bit, but also a bit. Another one now.
That's why you're a productivity guru. Look at that.
Okay. And what I can do though is search for something like, I look for the string. Ooh, I should add that to the document. And I can go and find things where I had a realization. Are you ready for a new one? Here's a new one. Thanks, Descript. Buck, buck. I knew this needed to be added to the list because I was talking, because like you'll be talking to somebody about a TV show. And we do that a lot. I do that. You do that. I give you lots of homework for things I think you would enjoy watching. And then sometime somebody will say, you were watching Ozark. Like, what are you up to? And I'll say, oh, yeah, it seems really good. I've only watched a couple episodes. And they're just incredulous. Like, why did you stop watching Ozark? Guess what? I need a name for when I'm not watching a show and there's no reason for it. Don't you feel like that needs a name?
Hmm.
So it's along the lines of, I thought you liked OmniFocus. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, like, as I used to enjoy saying, I think it's weird when people ask you why you're not doing something. And my response is, well, why am I not a potted fern? Like, it's a very odd question to ask somebody why they're not doing something or why they quote unquote stopped doing something. Well, because of life. You could ask, it sounds silly to say that, but you could ask the most bizarre questions in that way. You've never dismembered a body while you were visiting Spain? No. Well, why? Why didn't you ever do that? What explanation could I ever provide? I've never been to Spain. I've never dismembered a body. And it's so weird to me that you would expect me to have an answer for why I haven't done something. Does that ever strike you as odd?
Two things, because there's always two answers for you. I think people are much more interested in why you do or do not consume media than they are with me. But I also
You do not do Brown Shoe, in which I lived in like a TV show.
Okay, well, one, people seem way too interested in what sort of media you're consuming. And
no, she, I like that. I like that people care. That makes me happy.
It makes you happy.
I just don't have a way to explain why I haven't watched more of this given thing.
You just haven't gotten to it yet.
There's somebody out there right now, I'll bet you, of our 6 to 9 listeners. Nice. There's somebody out there who loves It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia more than me. And there's somebody whose favorite episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is Mac and Dennis' breakup. And they just heard me, a professed fan of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, say, I feel like I can't even remember whether I've never seen their favorite episode. Why have you never seen my favorite episode? Because I would do exactly the same thing. Imagine somebody stepped up to you and goes, oh man, I'm a huge fan of God, Doctor Who. I just love it. Like, oh man, yeah, my favorite's probably 11th Hour. And they go, 11th Hour? And you go, yeah, you know, the first Matt Smith episode. Oh, Matt Smith, right, the River Song guy. Yeah, I don't think I ever saw that one. You'd be like, what? How could you, what that? Because you, in your own head, that breaks your brain because of your paradigm for this thing. And I think that's what happens. And then people just say, like, like we were saying last night on Slack. Were you on the Slack last night?
I don't know.
I haven't checked back in, but where a friend of ours was mentioning some feedback that they had gotten from a listener.
Oh, the too much and too little problem type of thing.
Yes. And I it was right before I went to bed, and I'd had a couple of drinks because I'd finished doing Reconcilable Differences. And I'm going to, you know what? I'm not even going to pre-read this before I read it. I'm just going to read what I said as we got into a discussion about the familiarity of strangers and like how people behave sometimes. And I said, this is at 1:35 a.m. Pacific, as a massive podcast fan myself, I can confirm we should probably preclude this, but I'm going to do this. As a massive podcast fan myself, I can confirm that it's a medium that attracts passionate people with disordered thinking who often reside in a vast and sometimes fantastical interior world. And those mixers can sometimes yield a pretty weird emotional cocktail that frankly verges on taxi driver territory. Which is just to say, I swear I try so hard to see this kind of feedback as a compliment or maybe even a gift, because this person cares and they seem to want to like me. But hard as I try, I usually just end up feeling like a long-distance priest who's fated to nod and smile supportively through whatever insane turmoil and outgassing the penitent needs to get off his chest in a given day. Oh, really? Huh? Oh, yeah. You don't like why I stopped watching Ozark? There's really no reason.
You're just examining an age-old empathy problem because...
You mean other people are hard to understand?
Yeah.
final paragraph, final sentence. Sometimes I console myself, and this is a true thing. Sometimes I console myself with the fact that I have been passionately corrected when I spelled Wookiee wrong and when I spelled Wookiee right. That's a true fact. Oops, sir.
God.
Don't be a dick with strangers. Act like they're another person, you guys. Not just me. Especially not me. Who cares? I'm just a guy with a bang bang truck outside. But like with other people, like, you know, God, have a little bit of... We talked about this on Rectives last night. Have a little empathy for the machine. Well, in this case, yes. I mean the machine of everything. Have some empathy. Like, don't come in hot. Listen to what you said. Ask yourself, do I sound like a real weirdo right now? Or worse, it's okay to be a weirdo if you're sweet about it. But like, do I sound like a real creep? Like, and that's why I like things like calling somebody Mrs. So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. I know that's old-timey. I have empathy for the machine, I hope. And if I don't have empathy for the machine, I'd sure like to know it. But it's difficult to have empathy for the machine when the machine is people you've never talked to before saying kind of terrible things to you with a level of intimacy that can be a little disarming and not in a good way. And there goes the Bang Bang Machine. Oh boy.
Have empathy for the Bang Bang Machine. It's not its fault. I would never be, I don't think I've ever been upset when anyone has referred to me as Mr. Cox or Mrs. Both have Mr., Mrs. and Mix Cox have been used both verbally and digitally for me. And it's always
for people. Sorry. But for like with people where you had not expressed a preference or a requested a specific
correct.
One. Yeah. People just kind of guessing, trying to get it right in one.
Right. And then I assume that they're they're doing, they're like, you know what? I am going to just not well. Sometimes it's like, I'm just going to wing it. And in which case, like, okay, fine. Like, I don't know. Assume the best intentions. But it's difficult when you've always had to play defense because I've also been called Mr. and Mrs. Alex.
It sucks to respond to somebody credulously when you haven't yet realized that they're not being credulous, that they're not speaking. You know what I mean? You make yourself vulnerable and like, you know, it's almost like somebody's, it's like Colin Robinson. What was his joke? That not a Henway, but where he keeps trying to get somebody to say,
up dog. Oh, I could really
up dog, up dog. Right. Now. And so you're like, oh, you got me to say what's up dog. That's funny. That's funny the way you betrayed my trust. That's funny. Like, but right. Isn't that kind of part of it? It's like you have to make an in the moment decision to decide at what level you want to address this even.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we're struggling with the same thing and just coming at it in different ways. Like people are weird, but you've talked about people are getting weirder, but
I think
it that people are getting weirder or we just are being exposed
it's the pictures
to
that
more
got small. Yeah,
God damn it.
I feel like what was I watching? I was watching something or listening to something about Marvel stuff. It might have, and it doesn't matter, probably a podcast, but talking about like rehashing a history that's worth hearing if you don't know the history, which is, wow, why did Marvel not make a Spider-Man movie? Like, why did Marvel not make an X-Men movie? And it ends up being kind of like a bummer, but at one point in the 90s, God, who was this? God damn it. I'll see if I can find this podcast for notes.
Notes. Are you going
notes,
to get it for show
notes? Notes title. Somebody was basically saying, hey, look, you know, up until and into the 90s, Marvel made comic books and toys about comic books. That's the business that they were in. But, you know, and this guy, was it Julia on Downstream? Anyway, no. But anyhow, the point is, like, now today, it's easy enough to look back and go, oh, well, obviously, Jesus Christ. Like everything, it's all about IP, like the ability to like create a franchise and do all this stuff. But in the 90s when, you know, so Marvel had a really weird run. And like there was this period, like in the early 90s, all those stories you hear about when comic books became like Beanie Babies and like, you know, issue one of Uncanny X-Men, you know, the Magneto issue was like the biggest selling comic of all time. You could get these, you know, lenticular, like the 3D covers, Death of Superman in a black bag, like, you know, but there was like Beanie Babies. But then Marvel started running into a slump because they've never been that financially successful. So what did they do? We make comic books and we make toys about comic books, or we license, you know. So what did they do? They said, hey, look, we've got all this great, great stuff sitting around that we're not doing anything with because we don't make movies. So why don't we license our stuff to other people? And, you know, the big one, to cut to the chase, was that they licensed the right to make Spider-Man movies to Sony. But the Sony deal is pretty wild because, first of all, how do you know this fact in retrospect that Marvel only got 5%? Well, first of all, they got $10 million per movie. I think it was $10 million per movie that would be made. OK, that's one. Part two, Marvel gets, I think, 5% of the gross. Which is, wow, that doesn't seem like a lot. But the other one was, there's like a codicil that like, there was this window where you've got to create a new, if you want to keep this deal alive, you can keep this deal alive as long as you want, as long as you put out a new Spider-Man movie, something like between every 3 and 5 years. So why do we have so many reboots and like Andrew Garfield movies and stuff? Because they had to keep that deal alive. Why are there so many like, this is how Spider-Man, you know, origin stories? Well, people love that shit. They love hearing about power and responsibility. But it's so fascinating in retrospect. Why did Marvel make Spider-Man movies? Because they couldn't. But then after Spider-Man, I want to say, I think it was after the second Andrew Garfield one, and this got released in the hack of Sony's emails, right? They found out that basically Marvel wanted to make a deal with them. Let's say, let's invert this. How about you let us make the movies, but we keep the revenue split the same? But like we've gotten to where we can do a pretty good job with this. I don't know. I just think that's so fascinating. The upshot here, why am I talking about this? No reason apart from this is fascinating to me. But like, why was Marvel's, I could do 3 hours on the improbable, how improbable the success of Iron Man was. I mean, any nerd probably could. How in the fuck, these kids today, my kid has learned this, but did not know this. You may not even remember this. Do you remember how unhireable Robert Downey Jr. was in the early 2000s?
Only until I started listening to podcasts and reading articles about how crazy Iron Man was for that reason.
Drug problems and problems with the law, he was uninsurable. And it was considered laughable that he was ever going to have anything like a comeback, that he could make a Kiss Kiss Bang Bang or Zodiac or whatever. The idea of that, pretty crazy. Now let me understand this. So you've licensed off all your good characters, and all you have left is this detritus of characters most people just don't care about. So you're telling me you're going to hire the actor Robert Downey Jr. to play Iron Man? Fucking Iron Man? A guy who had to make a suit because he'd been kidnapped by the Viet Cong? Okay, sure. And yet, it is one of the great movies. But why Iron Man? Because that's what they had. Thor. Why Thor? Well, Thor was something they hadn't licensed away. The whole point of this is, when I think I realized that I loved the Thor movie. There were several times that I realized it. But a very funny moment is when he and Jane and Mjolnir and Dr. Selvig and everybody are sitting around. And remember, he finishes his drink and then he throws the glass at the floor and it shatters.
Let me say yes as if I've seen it.
Well, Thor is being Thor. Thor is like a disgraced god who's on Earth, and he has lost some of his mojo, but he's still very much the that little boy from Asgard. And so he throws his glass and it shatters. And everybody's like, what are you doing? Stop that. Stop that. Like, you're going to blow our cover. And he's like, what? What? This is what you do. I'm telling you, it's a compliment. I'm letting you know that I've enjoyed the meal. You know, like at a Greek wedding where you throw plates. And like, if Thor is happy, he breaks your shit. That's how Thor compliments you as the proprietor of this diner. And I think that's the problem. The problem is that there's a lot of people out there who don't realize people don't want their glasses broken as a way of saying thank you. And I think even when people are trying gamely to be respectful, well, some ways you try to be respectful. The way to be respectful to somebody in the South, to a stranger, is very different from the way you try to be respectful to somebody in New York. Like, if I'm pushing you around in Manhattan, it's because like you're part of the system, and like, yeah, we've got to get along. Get the fuck out of my way. Don't look at me. Like, that's pretty normal stuff in New York. Whereas the passive-aggressive kindness of Atlanta is pretty wild if you're not used to it. And so, you know, you end up saying stuff like you don't sweat much for a fat girl. Like, stuff that, like, will not land as a compliment, even though you think you meant it that way. And I think when we're trying to, at this fraught time, when we're not really sure what to say and do, maybe it starts with, I don't want to get canceled. But it also encompasses, I just don't want to be unintentionally, in my case, I don't want to be unintentionally hurtful with somebody. So how do I balance my neediness to be respectful to somebody with the understanding that my version of respectful does not and should not comport with everybody else's idea? For worse, probably for better, when we talk about the chitons of cultural hegemony, one thing we have lost is that common ground of knowing what's acceptable in this situation. right? And I think that isn't that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, but
20 minutes ago when you were talking about what people call you.
Yeah, but it's like they're like, okay, which Chris Evans am I talking to? Or to not even which Chris Evans, which Chris Evans Marvel character am I talking to? Like, and I'm even just too afraid to.
Well, you're saying you might be talking to Johnny Storm? Maybe Johnny Storm's asking you about your MX?
Is it Johnny Storm or is it
MX Sugar
like,
Tits?
Are you talking to Johnny Storm? Or, like, you're afraid, like, you don't want to address someone as Johnny Storm if they're Captain America.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No. You don't want to dead name Green Lantern if it's actually Deadpool.
You can't.
You dead name Deadpool? Deadpool. Deadpool used to be Green Lantern, but we don't talk about that. We also don't talk about the character from that movie.
Oh, I forgot about that one too. Yeah.
Yes. And this is the irony though, because as I've stipulated, Ryan Reynolds should be playing Hawkeye. There's no question about it. He should play almost all the superheroes.
That's
He'd be, can you even imagine how great he would be as Hawkeye?
I had a literal dream about it, probably induced by you talking about it.
Can't you just see him going, "Aw, coffee"?
Yes, with the dog, and then
fix
like, oh,
this dog. He'd be so good.
God, he would be so. Jeremy Renner was not.
Bring back the app, you cowards! Digga challenge, and we had a main challenge and a backup challenge.
I can't believe this is a 2-hour show. Everybody, please, for the love of God, please go to patreon.com/dubaifriday and maybe give us $5.
Oh yeah, yeah, we want the money. I mean, I'm asking you, please give us some
please.
Money.
I really
we need to grow our revenue stream.
Like I joke about losing my job, but I'm probably gonna lose my job, and not by anyone's fault.
Alex is probably gonna lose their job, and still lose the job, keep the tits. How about them MX sugar titters?
Gosh,
pew pew.
Someone was asking me this the other day.
Air horn.
I am not going to get in trouble, but okay, it is public.
What? I didn't say anything. What are you talking about?
I didn't know if you were air horning me or trying to get me out of
No. I'm making that monk, 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 that sound that they make. It means like, you know, now we're partying. Are y'all ready for this?
Okay. See, that's another. I didn't know which Chris Evans
you're talking
it
to?
It was, because I was like, is that the stop horn or is it the burr, 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 burr? Because that is how you make that noise.
Oh shit, this is my stream deck is so fucked right now. I keep this. Have you done any more with the shortcut? Got anything you can share with me?
Well,
it keeps getting lost. The stream deck keeps losing it.
I don't know if this was on the show or just in text. It might have just been in our super secret text channel where I was like, "Ooh, I keep getting tempted by this," because probably a year ago now, my cat. Hey, everybody, welcome to Dubai Friday. A stream deck is a little thing,
but
with
it's another. Okay, you feel free to do this bit, but I just want the shortcut to work. I want the shortcut to work.
Okay. A stream deck is a thing that you plug into your computer.
Your cat chewed on it. Yes, QED.
Okay.
Yum 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 yum. I'm Francis, and I'm an idiot. I like to eat electric.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Bok,
so,
bok.
Francis, the first time, my cat broke my stream deck. And then I was like, oh, man, Merlin, I want to get this big one. And hey, it has a replaceable USB-C. Isn't that nice?
You don't have room for that one. You don't have room for the one I've got.
But you know what, Merlin?
Your desk is a super fun site.
I know. But then, Merlin, I was like, you know what? You're right. I'm just going to get the one I had before. And you know what this little motherfucking trash cat did? Oh, no. Chonk, chonk, chonk. So now I'm going to try to get a replacement for this. But I'm just going to buy that huge ass stream.
Wait a minute. You bought a second one and the cat ate it?
Yes. Well,
oh,
just...
fuck me.
So, Matthew, I just
maybe you should put some of that don't chew on your fingernail stuff on the cord or something. Make it taste nasty.
That's actually a really fucking good idea. No, I had double-sided tape on it.
To like reinforce the does the cat always bite it? I mean, it's none of my business, just if you can say, OPSEC. Does the cat always chew on it in the same area of the cable?
No, that's the thing. It is.
Does it think it's an adversary, Alex?
Yes, he is.
Maybe he thinks it's a mouse.
He is a... Yeah. It's like he's afraid of headphones unless we have worn them because the little cord the nubbin? On it, those old timey headphones that have an audio jack.
This is like my mom and snakes. Like whatever we fear, we hallucinate.
It freaks him out, which is why I usually I won't let him see a new pair of headphones until I've worn them for a while, and then it smells like me and he won't attack it.
That's so funny. What a weird animal. You should get rid of that animal. That's a terrible animal.
Oh, God, I've tried. The door has been left open again. Oh, no. Oh, no. What's going to happen?
Oh, no. Don't go outside. We might never see you again. Go eat somebody else's equipment. Challenge this week was mine, and it's to watch a documentary that I first discovered in college, toward the end of my college career. It was on PBS, documentary called Sherman's March.
This was on PBS?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a lot of humping for PBS. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
There's no humping. What are you talking about?
There's
no humping.
Did you
watch humping. The right movie?
Oh, yeah, there's no... Oh, yeah, this is the...
The sexiest thing in it is the yoga exercises where for some reason he turned off his tape recorder.
Uh-huh, yeah, that definitely wasn't a... Mm-hmm. All right, I'm sorry, interrupted.
What
you watch it on PBS?
What are you
PBS?
Talking about? Okay. Sherman's March I'm not going to editorialize too much at this point. Let's just say that for its time, it was considered a very unusual movie. It is a documentary, but... it's also it's an essay movie in some ways. It's got a lot of levels. Sherman's March is about a guy named Russ McElwee who has decided he wants to do a documentary. He's from the South. He's from, South Carolina, I want to say.
Oh, I thought it was.
I think.
Oh.
Was it Georgia?
No.
Anyway, Russ McElwee is a filmmaker and he's decided he's gotten a grant and he wants to make a movie about Sherman's March to the Sea. Late in the Civil War, Sherman like ruthlessly plowed through the South on his way to Richmond. And like, he's a pretty tough character and he wanted to retrace those steps and kind of look at the culture. He's very much a Southern guy from the South. And that was the on main goal of Sherman's March. But as we'll discuss, for a variety of reasons, it ends up becoming about things other than, taking the steps through Civil War history. And we found a copy of it. We watched it, and I'm going to throw to you here. So then I'm going to mute so you don't hear me weeping softly. I loved this movie so much when I was in college. It landed on me so hard. The way this guy was, how fucked up he was, and not didn't realize how fucked up he was, because it's basically about this guy who is just yes. Burt Reynolds is a factor in his life. Yes, Civil War history but it's really about him, his family, and all of these extremely interesting women that he encounters, and he gets a crush on almost all of them. And although he does, in some ways, do Sherman's March, like I'm going to guess Alex probably did not buy in, but by the end, it's like, oh, this is kind of interesting how this all comes together. His fear of his nightmares about nuclear war. Like there is like some commonality to these things that he manages to pull together in the edit. Sherman's March, 1985. Alex, Sherman's March. Where do you begin?
I don't think it comes together in the edit. This man has made a number of documentaries.
Really? I didn't know that.
I had it does not come to... this feels like the most fake verite bullshit. Now I remember why I didn't see it. I'd seen...
Because there's a lot of the things that we've come to associate with bullshit documentaries, he totally does in this. It's just he did it first.
He didn't do it. No, he did not do it first. He's done it in every single one of his films. And it's like, oh man, maybe I'm having some nightmares.
Okay, well, sorry, real quick. I want to hear about like more like a Grey Gardens. Like whose documentary?
He ripped himself off in, you know,
but, like
the
you're
one...
saying like kind of done, like, maybe like the Maisels did this kind of thing earlier, but like the I'm in the documentary part, you feel like that was
yes,
before this? Okay.
And he did the most interesting character in this movie, I think anyway, is his former teacher and friend, Charlene, who he made an entire movie. I think that was his first movie.
Which one is
actually
she?
The older woman who's trying to get her or get him to date the Mormon girl. And
oh, wait, the matchmaker?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, she's a riot.
She's amazing.
She's so goddamn funny.
She's amazing. All of the this man who's traveling, supposedly accidentally making a movie about his life. Oopsie doopsie, look what I did. Yeah. Oh,
you think it's contrived?
Oh, 100%. But what's worse is I think he knows exactly how fucked up he is, and I think he does not care. And
I'm worried about that. Yeah.
I hate it so much because I can see myself in him, and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh,
like,
I can't. I can't see myself in him at all.
Yeah, no.
Serial yeah, monogamist who's not actually that interested in the people he claims to love. Doesn't relate for me.
Profiting off of my sorrow, mental illness, and like, oh, what? No, psh, no. And then, but I mean, it still felt, even watching and being like, God, I hate that I hate this, and I hate that I do this and put myself in everything.
So you disliked it on a lot of levels. You disliked
many,
it as a piece of
levels.
Art. Okay, you disliked the okay. All right, that's interesting.
This movie, like,
God, really? And it's long. It's also long.
Oh boy. The Burt Reynolds impersonator was funny. He was cute.
I think the women in this are just so the rollers are like, you know, the mermaid. I don't know the names of all the people, but
she's the first one.
The first one, the really pretty girl who's going to be in the commercial, and just the reaction shots from her friend. Like, there's this, there's so many great reaction shots in this. Oh, the model at the table. I liked her. I liked them all. But like, there's that one scene where the pretty actress woman is talking to her friend that she's staying with in Atlanta when she's going to try out for the commercial, mm-hmm. and she's like, you know, like, take you, like, you wouldn't be like a. What was the phrase? She said something.
Oh, an exotic woman.
Yeah,
she wanted
to be an exotic
woman,
beauty.
But yeah.
But that, okay, right, like, there, that's a pretty good example of Atlanta speak. Like, yeah. She didn't call her friend old and ugly, except mm-hmm. she kind of did. And then there was her holding her cigarette and just expressionless nodding along as the woman's talking. I love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
The lady with the glasses and on the treehouse, like, I love her. Oh my God. I just, the women in this, just the sister rowing the boat. Oh my God. I love her so much. And she got the plastic surgery.
I would be better at this if I was wearing underwear. Like, yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. I'm like, does everything I have, not just like my bullshit in film school, but like, has everything I've ever done seemed, is it this manufactured? And has it seemed this manufactured? Because you know that he talked to dozens of women over the making of this film.
Yeah, anytime you see a documentary, and when I say, like, you know, save in the edit, but like, anything you see in a documentary is what they decided to have in the documentary. And this is also a problem with Michael Moore, where, like, the first time when I saw, really at roughly the same time when I first saw Roger and Me, I was blown out of the water by Roger and Me. I'd never seen anything like it. And then I saw other Michael Moore movies where, okay, the problem is, like, now it's almost like Shyamalan, where, like, now I know your trick. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, you're really dishonest. Like, you're very dishonest in the way that you've put this together, and you're playing fast and loose with a timeline where that really matters. So, like, trying to make Roger from GM look bad, like, was not difficult to do because the guy's kind of a piece of shit. But also the way that he would, it's almost like, you know, getting back to journalists, those journalists who just like to yell, those Jim Acostas who love to just yell questions and then be interviewed later about how they yelled a question. Mm-hmm. Like, that's almost the way this kind of documentary making works, which is, you've crafted this whole thing from whole cloth, and like, the dishonesty, each movie, the dishonesty is clearer to see.
Yeah, and that's why I knew I wasn't going to like this coming into, I'm trying to, like, not shit all over it.
Please,
because,
no, hey, listen, please, I this is,
oh,
the
not
show.
For you, for me, because I know.
Well, but, like,
this.
I would like, if I can, I mean, it's not my job, but if I can put you at ease, you don't need to have organized thoughts about this, but if you just feel free to speak freely, that's why you're here. There's a lot to dislike.
I don't know if this movie could be made, but I don't think you can make a movie like this anymore. But I also don't think you can make a TikTok like this anymore. Like, trying to act as if...
Well, I mean, like, I hate to be this particular 55-year-old man, but it was the early 80s. It came out in 85, but I think he shot it. This is the latest time I rewatched, was the first time that I went, huh, about one fact, which is when he says, when they showed the shots of him in, like, sweeping up in the loft, like, is that supposed to have happened before the stuff in the movie? Because I got a feeling he shot that after he made the movie.
Mm-hmm. You can tell by the film grain.
It's much more arty and, like, composed in some ways. But, like, the shot of him, like, and I'm not trying to slag the guy, but when he walks up to the refrigerator and, like, stares in the refrigerator and then closes the door and walks away, not so different from every Queer Eye where they, quote unquote, surprise somebody at work. And I turn to my kid and say, wow, it's really lucky that they had a camera inside before they got surprised. Why are we not talking about this? Why are we not talking about the cameras inside the building? This well-composed shot of, like, a New York loft with drywall. You see him enter, you see him leave, you see him do something in between. You know, it's like a basic exercise from week two of film school.
I don't know if you noticed this, but they kind of started not cutting corners in Queer Eye, but, like, you can sort of tell, like, oh, this was a COVID closer to lockdown or not, based on how it
give
was
me an example.
Shot. When it's COVID times or whatever, or when it is it seems like April, they get rid of all of that, like, pomp and circumstance of, like, yes, Bobby is picking out these various swashes, and yeah, Caramo.
Oh, right, it's much more like Bobby, who is my favorite, Bobby sitting at, like, his mood board.
Yeah,
his elevated architect mood board, and, like, holding up swatches to the light and stuff like that. Because they can't do location shooting is the implication, right?
No. There is less of that because that requires multiple people to get multiple angles with multiple lighting in order to have that faux, like, yes, this is authentic. And whereas I think the best episodes, it is genuinely them just, like, sitting and talking to a camera. And if it's just them, by camera, I mean a camera and a person there, because usually there's, like, the DP and then at least one producer, probably two. I don't know, like, this season they're, like, just a little bit more loose, and I don't know, I think it makes for better TV. It's just fun. Whereas, like, this,
I can't stop making jokes about Anthony. Because, first of all, he is so desperately handsome. Second, they are finally giving a little bit of beef from Anthony, and I don't mean the kind he cooks unless it comes in a can. But, like, you get some titty shots of Anthony, like, walking the dog, Neon, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much more beef because he is categorically gorgeous, but he's also obviously useless. It's still funny. I know this is a joke for, like, five seasons, but it's still funny. I wanted to talk to you.
You've never climbed a tree.
Well, this is something I think sometimes one way, it's such an important issue right now, a way to say I love you, it was with food. This is called a sandwich. Sandwich involves one, two, or more pieces of bread and something in between. Olives come in cans, and you use a can opener to open them. Like, when he goes to the barbecue person and is, like, going to show him how to make barbecue, it's like, are you fucking kidding me?
That episode's good.
Oh, God.
God, he's handsome. He's so handsome.
He's handsome. I would have enjoyed it if he, you know what? Anthony. Yes, that's what Polish people name. Okay. Here's a question. When do you think F for Fake was made? The Orwell movie.
Orwell Wells.
It was Orwellian.
Either 1947 or 1957, I'm guessing.
Wait, really?
Born 1963.
Wait, no,
I don't know. I have no idea. I watched it once a long time ago. That's a fun movie.
The only reason you say, well, I think after that movie was made, any sort of like self-referential trying to hide the documentary was dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed your point. I see what you're saying. Yeah. The fact that like the whole point of that movie, well, not the whole point, but it's a very fun movie with a fun conceit, which is like, if you're watching a movie, it's fake. End of story. Like this is like, and I'm going to bring that to you through subterfuge and drawing you in and intimacy and misdirection and like all the ways that a good illusionist would do that. Right. Kind of.
Yeah. Yes. But it was not just like, it wasn't just like effects are fake. It was like, oh no. All of your feelings are fake too in this movie. Like, I don't think this guy,
well, but I just mean that like there's this, I don't mean this to sound as cynical as it certainly does, but like, I mean, a generous way to put this is that every movie, or any film, any video, it's all about decision making. What's in the frame? What's out of the frame? Right? We that's a nice way to put it. It's all about decision making. It's also it's and that decision making means it's a lot about what you leave out and what you do leave in. You can choose to present in a certain way that bolsters a certain case, whether that's a villain edit or a purple edit or whatever it is. Like, it's not cynical to say that, like, everything in a movie is made up unless, I mean, even, like, CC, like, London, you know, security footage represents a choice. Like, where did you point the camera? How was it lit? That, you know, right? All that kind of stuff. That sounds dumb, but, like, we just, because if you don't notice the seams or you don't notice the artifice or you, like, haven't seen enough stuff to understand when, you know, you know, just because you saw, for example, the shot of the woman smoking and reacting to what the other woman was saying was perfect. How do we know whether that was even shot on the same day that that woman was talking? We don't. Because as the editor, you have the choice of saying this will be more effective with this reaction than that reaction. And that sounds cynical. Like if you like to think of yourself as like, I'm a super fan of movies. It's all great. And journeys of the mind. It's like, well, no, but like every if you don't notice it, that means it's working. And if you do notice it, it means it's not. That's what makes watching The Room or Fateful Findings, especially Fateful Findings, so interesting is like you don't even realize how much you know about film vocabulary until you see somebody who doesn't. And like you don't even need to know what the 180 degree rule or sight line, you don't need to know what any of that means until you see it being done poorly. How come when this person's talking, they're looking over here and I can hear air conditioning? How come when this person's talking, they're looking in a different direction and there's no air conditioning? Well, that's like that person didn't go to film school or didn't pick up, wasn't enough of a fan to learn how to work around those things. Whereas Tommy Wiseau, the master, did a very good job making a terrible movie. Whereas Neil Breen does a terrible job making a bad movie.
Oh, God. Don't invoke the name.
Be afraid.
Do you think... hard agree. Guesses.
No more books. He wants that coffee so much. Even after God. He passed out on his Sony, he's still like trying to slurp up.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do you think, what's his name? Ross. Do you think Ross really set out to make a movie about the Sherman's March? Because he seems to maintain that story that, oh yeah, I was set out to make this movie and it became a different movie.
That's a really good question. I'm trying not to be cynical.
That's where my cynicism comes. Like, that feels inauthentic to me.
The whole pretense, the map at the beginning, all of that stuff, that's all like a bit.
It feels like something Joaquin Phoenix would do, except mm-hmm. he'd probably do it better. Like, right, I don't know. And like,
So there's a lot for you not to like about this on almost every, I'm not taking the Mickey. Like, but like the filmmaking in retrospect, we look at it and go, wow, that's pretty sloppy. I mean, you know, or that's pretty, like he's the worst kind of, I've told you this about acquaintances of mine, and I don't like to say this often, but I've had acquaintances in my life where I find the way that they behave difficult to understand, for example, right? And the way I would phrase it sometimes is either the way you're acting is a bit or it's not a bit. The problem is, if the way that you're acting all the time is a bit and you know it, what the fuck are you doing? If it's not a bit and you don't know what you're doing, what the fuck is wrong with you? There's no good answer to the way you act. You can introduce some kind of like jokerfied chaos theory to like, oh, you're a wild card, bitches. But like, why do you behave like this? Do you know like the way that you are? I say that here because like when I watched this at the time, I very much thought, I take no pride in saying this, Alex. I really felt like I got this guy because this is how I was before I learned distinctions between love and infatuation. Before I learned that, and again, I know I'm not supposed to say this because it's codependent. Before I learned that, like, I won't say that love is caring more about the other person. I think there's worse models. But love is like you want. A kind of love that I would honor is the kind where you primarily want to help that person succeed and be happy in life, which involves stuff like learning what they really care about and not being dismissive about it. It's just that, and this, is this a bit or is this not a bit?
Why aren't you in love with me?
Is this a bit or not a bit? Because neither way, it's not a great look, right? Isn't that kind of part of it?
Oh, yeah. But then at the same time, I despise it because I can still see myself in this guy.
I 1,000% see myself in this.
I don't like it on nearly every level. Well, I mean, some of the girls are hot, so.
Programs were nice.
Yeah.
Remember that when Jane Krakowski sang to Tina Fey, like, you never support what I do. And yeah. Like every time she goes to see, oh, I like the lights.
Such a good show.
Oh, it's such a good show. Yeah. What was I going to say? Oh, I was going to talk about a Buñuel movie. I'm going to mention two things here that I'll put in notes. Land Without Bread. And I think this, you could argue that this might be the OG. Let's see. Land Without Bread. 1933 French language Spanish pseudo documentary directed by Louis Buñuel. I want to repeat, 1933. So did you ever see this in your travels?
Oh, heck yeah.
Oh, so you know this?
Yeah.
They're pushing the donkey off the mountain. You've seen this?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Okay, great.
I thought you were doing this.
Well, no, because you never know. I mean, I wouldn't have seen this if it weren't for the film series at New College. The film focuses on the Las Hurdes region of Spain, the mountainous area around the town of La Alberca, and the intense poverty of its occupants. I want to repeat. 1933. The intense, hilarious poverty of its occupants, who were so backwards and isolated that bread was unknown. A main source of income for them was taking in orphan children for whom they received a government subsidy. So, but this is a, am I right? This is a made-up documentary.
Mm-hmm.
It's a made-up documentary about made-up people with their made-up problems. And it makes a point, but like 1933... there was already like a lot of film theory stuff out there. And like he made a movie where they pushed a donkey off a mountain.
Well, and the whole, like the quote point was to be like, yes, all movies are made up. See, we tricked you. But I think it is a very good, I don't know. I find it entertaining, but
well, it's definitely worth checking out. Like the movie that it's often paired with, Andalusian Dog. It's, you need to see these. Like,
yeah.
If you like movies, same way I would say like, oh God, skip a ton of movies from the 80s and 90s that are funny and just go watch The General by Buster Keaton. Like there's these movies where you're like, these seem like they're from another time because they are, but and especially if you can get a good print. Or like, you know, watch on Criterion. I watched this Holocaust documentary on Criterion last night. It was just gorgeous.
Hoarders and the Holocaust. My gosh.
Yeah. And so it's if you're like me and you grew up with, there's a series actually based in the Tampa Bay area that I think was syndicated nationally. I think it was called Masters of the Silent Screen. And I got to see like all these really good silent movies on Saturday afternoons on PBS. But like that's back when we all thought silent movies were people dressed as cops running fast on grainy, damaged film. But like if you see Charlie Chaplin in like a good print that's been, you know, because they used to hand crank them, and there's all kinds of reasons why they look dumb. If you fixed all of that, or like Buster Keaton, or like Charlie Chaplin, any of that stuff, like Louise, what's her head? Any of those classics from back in the day, they're just astonishing to watch. And you're like, oh, this is where a lot of these people, including some terrible racists, basically developed a lot of the vocabulary for what we think of as being a film. But like, it's like I say, the thing to understand about the Beatles is there was no Beatles before the Beatles. The Beatles were not copying the Beatles. They were the Beatles. And in these instances, like Boonwell was Boonwell. Like he, and to some extent, Dalí, were doing some pretty crazy shit in the fucking 30s. I don't, you know, Dalí, he took a lot of, he was Warhol before Warhol. He loved signing things and having his name on things, but he, there's a lot of stuff he didn't do. It's true. Like
no,
in like
right.
When they built his museum in St. Pete that I've been to many times, you could like buy a tile that was supposedly signed by Dalí. The biggest piece when I visited there, last time I visited there, the largest piece I think at the time was the famous Toreador painting, which he totally didn't paint. He had people paint it for him and he supervised it and said a little more red over there, more bull, like whatever. Like but, you know, of course he could. Like he, you can go and look at his paintings from the early 30s when he would be painting with a single horsehair. And you can only really see it like in the flesh. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is like, I don't know. There's lots of levels to enjoy stuff on. But in your case, you know enough to be dangerous.
I knew him enough to despise it on so many different levels. But the thing that, like, if you're going back to the, like, silent film era, I mean, I'm thinking about, God, I was trying to find the title, but, like, the first, quote, gay movies that were made, like, the majority have been destroyed.
Well, one of the first movies ever shot was Two Men Dancing.
Well,
oh, right? Wasn't one of Edison's first things, like, Two Men Dancing?
Yeah, people over like they were doing like a hee ha.
Well, that's what I mean, like that's what they could. I mean, I've got a lot of pictures of seltzer cans because every time I get a new camera and set it up, the first thing I do is take a photo of whatever's next to me. It doesn't make me a scholar of can.
No. But like there's
has much to say. Notice the sweatiness of the outside of the can. It looks like aluminum because it is.
No, I just want seltzer. Oh dear. You've got your Hal's coming. I'm very jealous.
I got it. I would be happy. Why don't we talk about it in the after show? I have a lot to say about the Hal's.
Oh, we should. Should say something.
We should probably get to that soon. Yeah. I'm glad. Thank you for suffering me to watch this. I'm sorry it was so long, but do you have anything else you want to say?
What was with the dog part? I'm not doing a bit. I'm like, did
which
some guy
part?
Come in? There are actually a lot of cute dogs. The one dog that's like attacking a guy who has come in, was that just like a one off? Like someone's broken into a house?
I totally don't remember this. What part of the film was this in? Are you saying this is in Sherman's March?
Yes. Which woman was it? It's before.
I have to admit to you that I rewatched this in bits. And so like I honestly haven't watched this in 3 or 4 years. And when I rewatched it this time, like I kind of watched it in like 4 sittings. So my chronology is a little screwed up.
Okay. Well, you would remember like a dog literally foaming at the mouth, attacking this guy that has come, but not attacking because he's on a leash. All right. I need to.
What about the African-American guy?
Oh, the piano player. Holy shit.
No, well, like the guy who's like, you know, yeah, she passed. Like his face.
Oh, yes.
Just squeezes my heart. Oh. I love that guy so much. I just want him to be happy. Him and Marina. That's all I really want. Well, I want other people. I want you to be happy. I want you and Matt to be happy. I want Ross McElway to be happy. Don't you?
He was making movies up until 2011. He did fine.
And for some reason, I shut off my tape recorder.